The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Happy that you are joining us today. And as you know, we take your questions and topics that you would like us to talk about, and we have been a little bit inundated from many of you who are business owners talking about a pain point you're having in running your business, and it's kind of surfaced since the COVID crisis has been part of our life. And when I talk about business, I'm not talking about the fact of businesses being able to operate. I'm talking about businesses being able to function on their day-to-day business activity. There's a coin shortage. So for many businesses who rely on coins, quarters, nickels, dimes, change, there is a drastic shortage in our country. So joining me to talk about it is Philip Deal, the 35th Director of the United States Mint. Philip is also former Chief of Staff of the U.S. Treasury Secretary and currently serves as President of the U.S. Money Reserve, one of the nation's largest distributors of U.S. government-issued gold, silver, and platinum coins. Philip, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast with me, Steve Cordasco.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yep, I'm thrilled that you were able to join us. And I've been delaying this conversation, just wondering where it fits in the list of priorities that we have so much to talk about when it comes to people's life and their wealth.
But yes, indeed.
I've been inundated with people with this pain point who are business owners saying, our business isn't so much suffering from COVID. We're suffering in that we can't operate because we don't have money. And what I mean by money, it's the coins. So my question to you is, do you agree with the emails that I'm getting from many of the people who are listening right now to us that there is a coin shortage here in our country?
Well, there certainly appears to be, because I'm seeing lots of media reports about it. When I make transactions, it's typically with a credit card. And that's one thing I think has happened is, over the last several decades, we've seen increased use of credit cards and debit cards and electronic transfers and that sort of thing. And I think COVID has really sped up that process. Part of the reason for that is that people are concerned about the ability to acquire COVID through contact. And, you know, there's lots of contact with coins and currency that occurs. And I think there are some people who say, well, you know what, I'd rather use my credit card in this situation. Also, there are a lot more people we know are ordering online. And so, of course, there's no currency transaction in those situations. So I think that is a really big factor in what's going on. Coinage and currency depends on the circulation of coins already in the marketplace. And then that's augmented as a relatively small percentage of new coins and currency that then are injected into the market from the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and the U.S. Mint to the Federal Reserve and from there into banks. So without the coins circulating, then that is created. I think that's the major reason behind the shortage. But there are other reasons as well, I think.
Okay, so if I can sum it up right now, the number one reason is the ecosystem was disrupted, is what I think I'm hearing you saying. And that is,
that's exactly right, yes.
The logistics in the flow of currency has been knocked off kilter, so to speak.
Yes.
And
yes,
therefore,
that's right.
The pace and the flow of that prior to COVID has been altered. So being someone who was 35th director of the United States Mint, was this something you looked at, meaning figuring out how much coinage to have in the system? while also the system had its own coinage flow. Was there a formula that's used at the Treasury or the Mint? How does it work? How do you judge the flow of currency, and how do you keep everything stimulated so that there's no blockage? It sounds like this is a blockage at the moment. How did you do prior to COVID, or when you were in charge of the world at the Mint? How did you handle that?
Well, we changed it when I was at the Mint. Prior to me coming on board and sort of discovering this problem, the Federal Reserve Bank, their regional banks, ordered coins from the United States Mint based on their own economic models. And we just responded to those orders. And as a result, and the Federal Reserve, frankly, was not very good at projecting demand for quarters. Demand for quarters depends on how strong the economy is. Now, this is not the case with COVID today. COVID is a very different kind of experience that we've never had before. But in the boom and bust cycle, when the economy is really strong, there's greater demand for coins. And when the economy goes into recession, there's less demand for coins. And the Federal Reserve, when I got to the Mint, was very poor in predicting what coin demand would be. It was very slow in responding to changes in the trend of the economy. We developed our own econometric models, which were much better than what the Federal Reserve had. And so we could anticipate changes and cut back or increase production based on our own projections. But like I say, COVID is entirely different. If it were a typical kind of recession, then we would see demand for coins dropping, and we wouldn't have a shortage in the market. In fact, what we'd have is this vast oversupply sitting at the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Mint. But this is a completely different kind of recession.
Is that supply and demand of coin, would that be a leading indicator of economic activity or a lagging indicator?
The way the Federal Reserve was forecasting coin demand was a lagging indicator. And what we did was we looked ahead at the very earliest signs of a shift in the economy, and we began to cut back as that developed. So we did sort of make it a concurrent or even a little bit leading economic indicator. We could kind of see softness in the economy develop.
So as a financial guy, you saw me see the door open that you just gave me right there, and I jumped through the doorway to ask you, leading or lagging? And now you say it's leading, but I think what you're going to tell me, because I'm going to twist your arm here and say, look, I know you said this COVID thing's a lot different, but I guess we can't use this shortage of coins as hopefulness that the future business cycle is going to be very strong, or it's stronger than what's anticipated. I think what you're going to tell me right now is COVID is the reason why money or coins are not in circulation. More people are not going out. More people might be sitting with that jar they would take to the bank and get the coins counted and give them to the bank and take dollars. I think you're going to tell me that's the primary reason why there's a shortage, not a boom in the economy.
Yes, you nailed it. I think that's exactly right. And because this is such a unique in the modern history of econometrics and coinage and currency, we've never seen anything like this. So we have no guide for how this will transpire. And I think really what COVID has done is cut the link between economic trends and demand for coinage. To a certain degree, COVID has accelerated that separation that had been occurring over several decades. And we see this, I think the clearest indication of this is how much commerce has moved from brick and mortar companies to online transactions. And obviously currency has nothing to do with online. And so I think we're going to see a significant change and a decrease in demand for coinage and currency as a result of that.
So business owners who rely on more cash and paper and coin money flow, COVID may have accelerated the death of traditional currency. Is it fair that we can maybe make a bold statement like that?
I wouldn't say it's the death. I mean, the death of coinage and currency has been predicted, you know, basically since credit cards and certainly since debit cards took off and greater number of electronic transactions. But there's a very real appeal to currency because of the privacy element to currency. A transaction that depends on coinage and currency cannot be traced, whereas any kind of electronic transaction obviously can be traced unless you're using Bitcoin or something. And of course, that's a tiny fraction of any kind of economic transaction these days. So there'll always be that appeal. And there's also the convenience of just, you know, paying with cash when you're out.
Yeah, it gives people, I'm finding cash gives people a sense of security in that, oh my gosh, if my debit card doesn't work, at least I got a few bucks in my pocket that I can put some gas in the car, do whatever you need to do. It's interesting because
That's right.
If you look at the price of Square, the multiples it's trading at, Square is that electronic device for those listening that might not be aware of it, where you can swipe a credit card. Small businesses find it very convenient because it plugs into a cell phone and you can do a transaction. Well, that stock, it's almost trading at multiples as crazy as Amazon was in its day before it was earning money. And everybody's scratching their head saying, oh my gosh, how much more can this particular stock go? And I think, as you mentioned, there's a direct correlation between COVID, a little bit of an acceleration and change in the way we do business as a society, where electronics are going to be more involved. You said something interesting where you said there's a privacy component to currency and you know, traditional money. And I want to play off that a little bit, not so much with what people are doing in their own day-to-day lives and why they want that privacy, but I want to talk about the lack of transparency that are coming out of the current mint as well as the Treasury, because nobody wants to come on and talk about it. Share with us why there's a lack of transparency right now from those that are serving on behalf of the U.S. citizens in positions in government to talk about this, but they don't want to talk about it.
Yes. Well, I'm going to speculate a little bit based upon my own experience and my own experience at the Mint. And I spent so much of my career in politics, I'll also speculate at that level. From my experience at the United States Mint, when I got to the Mint, your description was a perfect description of sort of the bunker mentality at the U.S. Mint. And what I discovered was that the information systems were so poor that nobody wanted to talk to anybody in the media because they were afraid that they'd be contradicted by information that the Mint had issued somewhere else in some other format. And so the easiest thing to do was really not to give much information, to keep their lips shut. And this was true across a very wide variety of issues and areas. One of the things we did at the United States Mint when I was there was greatly improve the information gathering and analysis capabilities at the Mint. And there wasn't a single press release or press statement that didn't go out that I hadn't reviewed. And so we got much more transparent during my time at the Mint. And it was easier too, because we were fixing a lot of the things that our customers and that the public felt were broken at the U.S. Mint. Now, there may be an element of that because there's tremendous uncertainty in the marketplace. And because of the uncertainty about coinage, probably people are very cautious at the U.S. Mint in climbing out on a limb and giving you the kind of explanation that I'm willing to give you, because I can't be held accountable, and nobody at the Treasury Department will call me and complain about whatever I say. So I can give you my best account and without having any concern about being second guessed. I think there's also, again, I'm speculating, but I think there's also a big political issue that is leading to the silence from the United States men. And that is, really no one at a political level in this administration wants to talk about COVID. This is, anything you say is likely to get you in trouble at the highest political levels, at the Treasury Department and at the White House. So why climb out on that limb and court that kind of controversy? So I think, informed speculation, I would say those are the two big factors.
Now, if you were involved, let's say you were still, in a leadership position, let's put ourselves in the shoes of those leaders. What could somebody do? Do they try to increase production of coins? What would you do to get it into, try to get coins in the system? Because I would imagine this is a drag, an economic drag on business, or maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's an inconvenience. And that doesn't, when I say it's an inconvenience for businesses and for banks, I'm not, denigrating how important it is. If it's an inconvenience, then, businesses are going to call their members of Congress, and members of Congress will be irritated and call people at the U.S. Treasury Department or at the Mint. And so, there are squeaky wheels out there that aren't getting greased, and that's never a good thing. But I don't think it's probably interfering with economic. There are so many other huge obstacles to the economy getting back up and running today that the shortage of coinage is basically nothing compared to those other factors.
Philip Deal is my guest. He is 35th director of the United States Mint. Philip is also former chief of staff of the U.S. Treasury Secretary and currently serves as president of U.S. Money Reserve, one of the nation's largest distributors of U.S. government-issued gold, silver, and platinum coins. Philip, can we switch and talk gold a bit? Gold is hitting record highs. Share with us on why gold is up right now.
Again, there are multiple factors. I think the biggest factor is that for several thousand years, gold has been the go-to asset in times of economic and political crisis. You could always rely on gold at least holding its value during those kinds of periods of turmoil, and typically going up in value. And in more modern history, over the last 30 or 40 years, in every major political or economic dislocation in the United States or worldwide, typically because of globalization. If it's happening in the U.S., it's happening all over the world. In those times, you can go back and compare gold against every other major asset class, and gold beats their performance during that period of time. And so I talk about gold as being wealth insurance, and that, in like insurance, life insurance or home or auto insurance, when, an accident occurs or other bad news occurs, that's why you hold that asset, that insurance. And so if you make gold part of your portfolio, then when the other assets are going down in those periods, gold is going up and protecting a portion of the value of your portfolio.
My advice over the years has been, it's okay for everybody to have a piece of gold, right? I own gold. I was more of a believer. Now, tangible gold is okay. you know, to have some of that. But it's difficult. It's like coins, right? Currency coin. We're talking about quarters, nickels, and dimes, and business owners don't want to touch it. It's dirty. You got to get it around. You got to store it. But I was a paper gold fan. You know, the miners and those that are part of the infrastructure of creating the tangible gold.
Right.
It paid a dividend. You could get in and out easy. You didn't have to store it. But for those that are more conspiracy theorists who want the tangible gold because everything could shut down and you want to be able to have something physical, what's your take on that? Physical versus paper? And then to take it a step further, what type of physical? I've talked about monster boxes in the past on this program.
Right.
So can
right.
you share with our audience, you being a metals expert, gold, silver, platinum coins?
First of all, in the interest of full disclosure, my company sells physical gold. And we don't sell any form of paper gold. So with that as an understanding and full disclosure, I'll give you my opinion about this. And before I joined this company, I looked deeply into the patterns and the different value propositions of paper gold versus physical gold. Now, physical gold, as you were saying, is that if you are in a crisis situation, and it doesn't have to be a situation like the end of the world or the prepper situation, if you are expecting or you think it's possible that there will be a huge dislocation, either political or economic, then physical gold is your go-to asset. And this is one of the reasons why physical gold is so popular in China and India and other developing nations, because it is security in crisis situations where they'll always have that asset. And it might be, economic dislocation. It might be a situation in which they need to flee the country, and they can take that with them. And we have seen this happen across history, in which people have faced huge crises and needed to leave, and gold was their ticket out of their country and out of their situation. It happened in World War II in multiple occasions. Mm-hmm. So that is part of the attraction of physical gold. Another part of it is that people don't, and I think this is legitimate, there are a lot of people who are not comfortable with paper gold assets like ETFs. Mm-hmm. Before I came into U.S. Money Reserve, I was very curious about ETFs. And at that time, one of the largest gold ETFs had their prospectus out, and I read through it. And it sort of made my hair stand up because of all the caveats that were written into that perspective. And I came out of that saying I'd never invest in gold ETFs because of all those caveats, those caveats meaning, well, if this goes wrong, mm-hmm. then, you're out of luck. You bear that risk. Now, in terms of the miners, there's been a pretty consistent pattern over the last 20 years, not universal, but pretty consistent, that miner stocks have not performed as well as gold has. And part of the reason for that is that gold is getting harder to find and more expensive to mine. So the margin that the miners are getting, even as gold prices go up, is shrinking. And so if your play is gold itself, then gold is a better return than the miner stocks are. There's another element in this too, and one of the reasons why gold prices are going up is when you're getting a good return, you know, like you would from a bond or a stock, and your willingness to incur risk is high, then, you know, gold isn't so attractive because you don't get a return. You have a cost, a relatively small cost, of having it in a bank safe deposit box. But today, returns are so low that that negates the cost and the lack of a return on gold. And stocks, you may get a higher return, but you also incur a greater risk. Mm-hmm. And those of us who follow the market today understand that equity prices and bond prices are being propped up by Federal Reserve policy today. We would have seen a crash in the market if the Federal Reserve had not stepped in. And of course, we did see a crash, 30% drop in markets before the Federal Reserve stepped in.
Gold versus silver versus platinum, where would you be going now? And the reason why I'm bringing that up is we had another question from a listener saying, hey, I seem to be able to get more from silver. Now, there's a conspiracy theory behind this. That is, if the system shut down and somebody needed to go buy, you know, something from someone else, that they would use some other form of tradability. That's what drives gold. In time of crisis, you have something that you can go to that will have some value universally. Yes. Silver and platinum fall in that same category, I believe, although they're not gold. So the question came, should I be buying silver because I can get more silver? And therefore, if I need to trade this and use it to buy goods and services, that would be an easier way to do it. So share with us, gold, silver, platinum, where would you be building your tangible asset space in?
Well, one of the big differences between gold and other precious metals is that other precious metals like silver and platinum are used much more extensively in industrial applications and other commercial applications. And as a result, silver and platinum is more tied to economic cycles. So the business, when the economy is strong, there's greater demand for those products. And when the economy is weak, then demand drops off. Whereas gold is much more insulated from that kind of rise and fall of commercial demand. And as a result, it more clearly reflects fear gripping the market, whether it's geopolitical fear or economic fear. Gold is a fear investment, just like any form of insurance is a protection against bad news, catastrophe, or any other kind of fear-inducing event. So it depends on what your goals are. If your goal is financial security in bad times, then gold is the place to be.
What's your formula for the right percentage of gold in a portfolio?
Well, I don't have a formula. I basically have factors that people need to weigh. One is risk averseness. Gold protects your overall portfolio value. Another thing is your view of whether or not you're optimistic or pessimistic about the mid to long-term future, the economic future. I can well see people who are really pessimistic, not only about the immediate future, but for some years to come. And if you're really a pessimist, then I think gold, that suggests that gold should be a larger part of your portfolio. And for example, I have been a pessimist about the economic and political future of not just people in the United States, but in the world. I'm not a pessimist on the long term, but I have felt like we're headed for trouble for the last 5 years. 7 years. So that's one of the reasons why I've been an advocate for gold in that respect. Also, it depends on you know, when you're what your perspective is on when you're going to retire. I would, you know, that would also be a factor in how I would weight gold as part of a portfolio. And then the size of your portfolio, that's another factor as well. If you're looking to hedge some and, you know, to ride an economic boom or your expectation for one, then platinum or silver is a better play for you. But absolutely, if what you're looking for is a precious metal that you can use in commerce in bad times, well, obviously, because silver is a lot cheaper than gold, then it's easier to imagine using that in economic transactions. The part of the problem with that is that you have to have a, in order for that to work, you have to have commercial entities that are able to transact your in real time with real time silver prices, and that's much more likely to happen in gold than it is in silver. In fact, if you go to Asia, commercial, especially jewelry sellers, know on the spot what the spot price of gold is and will conduct commercial activities in that way.
Yeah, it seems as if where we have credit card machines, they have scales. And
yes,
they right
yes.
away know it. And in India, they'll just take a bangle and they'll take a link out of it. And what I try to tell people who think that they might need to use gold at some point to transact their day-to-day life living, you know, the challenge comes in of using a 1 ounce coin. What do? Do you shave a little piece off of that? And I try to tell folks buy sleeves of 1/10 of an ounce and you get coins that are almost the size of a dime, 10 of them to equal an ounce. But people tend to shy away because there tends to be a little bit of a premium on that convenience.
Yes, that's true. But I think the real value of gold in times of economic crisis is not to go to the store and buy groceries. That's not the value proposition. I think the value proposition is to have your wealth in a way that it's immediately available and transportable. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. You can carry 10th ounce, American Eagles. And, that wouldn't be very good in that situation.
Right. And especially people worry the government's going to come and confiscate gold again. And therefore, you know, how do you get through the metal detector and say, you know, not my gold. But anyway, that's a different story for a different time.
Yes.
And looks like I found a friend in Philip Deal, who was 35th director of the United States Mint. And Philip is also former chief of staff of the U.S. Treasury Secretary and currently serves as president of U.S. Money Reserve, one of the nation's largest distributor of U.S. government issued gold, silver, platinum coins. Philip, can you give us a way to reach the Money Reserve and those that might want to engage in gold, silver, or platinum, a way in which they can be directed to your group?
Yes, on the web, usmoneyreserve.com. And I encourage them to go there and to become familiar with us, know the background of the company. I never think it's a good idea to just randomly go into the market on something like any kind of investment, much less precious metals, and not really getting familiar with a company. Mm-hmm. And one of the things as a director of the United States Mint, I had a lot of opportunities. I ended up coming to U.S. Money Reserve because I thought there were some real opportunities for me to contribute to the development of the company. And I had a deep commitment to customer service at the United States Mint that was demonstrated in a lot of things that we did there. And I was very impressed with this company and its likewise its commitment to customer service.
It's about what we're about, and that is education. And you're recommending people educate themselves and get clarity and then some guidance on how to navigate through. And for those that want to be in this space or add this to their overall mix of assets for their wealth, there's always a place to go. And why not go to a place where you can get an education and clarity with some guidance? So, Philip Diehl, thank you so much for being part of the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast with me, Steve Cardesco.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
Take care. Thanks for being part of today's program. As always, you can feel free, send me questions directly, asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfn, as in Cardesco Financial Network Plan.com. Make it a great week, a safe week. Thanks for being part of today's program.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardesco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.